Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Raising the vibration on the Live Paranormal Radio Network and iHeartRadio.com. We're also on Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, iVox, and more. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 28-year talk radio host in Los Angeles and beyond. I'm a creative and a performing artist, and I come to you live from my home in Southern California every day at 3 o'clock Pacific time. Raising the Vibration, the radio show, is an outreach of a nonprofit movement of peace and love and kindness and unity that I founded in 2016, really to carry on my mother's legacy, the teachings that I received from her, both spiritually and from a humanitarian perspective. Mom always believed we needed to have more peace, more love, more kindness, and more unity throughout the human family in order to live a better life for each of us. With this show, I've also added the cornerstone words, ascend, evolve, inspire, and love. Basically, what are you doing to raise your own personal vibration? How is that adding to your overall evolvement? And then how are you taking both of those things and using them to inspire others and to put more love into the world? Basically, this show is about passion. It's about service. It's about what are you doing to make the world a better place? And have you found your place? And then how are you hoping to inspire others to do the same? So every week on the show, I gather folks that I believe to be the brightest and most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in the spiritual community, the entertainment community, the world of give back, all of my communities. And we just talk about what can we do to raise the vibration of it all. So my guest today is this first time on any of my shows. I'm so excited to have them. I co-host a friend show every 2 weeks, and Nick was a guest on that show last month, earlier this month. And so I just sort of fell in love with their just attitude about everything and knowledge about everything, not just the LGBTQ plus community, but just humanity in general. Some people, you know when people are your people, a friend said to me once, and I think that's true. So Nick is a non-binary genderqueer designer and advocate and activist based here in L.A., known most for creating high-quality, gender-neutral footwear, Nick Casey footwear. And also they're involved with the Queer Prom, and there's so much exciting stuff going on I want them to tell you all about. Please welcome to the show my wonderful new friend, Nick Casey. Hi, sweetie. How are you? It's good to hear your voice.
Good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me, Sheena. I'm excited to be on your
Absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely. Oh, and I knew you were perfect when we sat on Gay Ann's show together, on Between the Sheets together, because some people just radiate that, being on their own path, and we all need to be on our own spiritual path, right? That's super important. But also, like, what can you do to add to the whole of the earth and make it just a little bit better? And I completely saw that in you, and I love that. And that's why I wanted to get you here. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. I love that feeling of being seen. So thank you so much for that.
So when did you realize, because you're an artist, right? You and I both started as artists.
Mm-hmm.
When did you realize that your art wasn't just about you? It was about how it was contributing to the world overall and making the world a better place.
Well, since I was a child, I was actually, I guess I could consider myself an artist since I was very young, because it was one way I found an outlet to express myself. And I found that most of the art that I did would really, it really represented how I was struggling on the inside and how I felt on the inside. So whether it was like doodling, you know, masculine clothing, or sculpting very androgynous, ambiguous, genderless bodies, you know, and those are things that at the time I would have never realized why, right? It was just something that was just really deep, much, much deeper inside that I was trying to discover myself. And I think as I became older and an adult, I realized that I wasn't the only one who was struggling, and that I was not born into a world that was very kind to me, and that is, if I'm going to choose to exist and live and thrive, then I need to really dedicate myself to making this world a little bit better so that no one else would feel the way I felt.
Yeah. I think that's so important. And I think that just should be a no-brainer for every human on the earth, although I know, sadly, Nick, it's not. But it should be, right? I mean, we should all be here.
Right.
I mean, look at an ant farm, right? I mean, ants are all working for the benefit of everyone else. And everybody does
right.
their
ants,
thing. And everybody knows
bees,
what the thing is.
I mean, there's so many things in nature innately, organically are designed, you know, to think of the whole, the greater whole, right? And I almost feel like sometimes that humans might be the only living beings on this planet that doesn't all have that mentality.
I agree. Yeah. My mom had an expression, human beings are just smart enough to be dangerous. And I think
right, exactly.
we're just smart enough to think that we're so smart that we don't need to work on anything, when the truth
right.
is we probably have a lot more to work on than other species that are always connected to spirit and also follow their instincts and do what is best for everyone. And I hope we're starting to get there. I feel like we're entering another age of enlightenment where we're starting to get there. There's always going to be pushback from the unenlightened when something like that happens. But I feel like we're on a really good road again, and that makes me feel very good and very safe in the world. You know,
Sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say that in a way, even though it sucks, you know, how much we're kind of going backwards, but I almost feel like you kind of feel almost comforted knowing that you're on the right track and you are making just enough progress to scare enough people to want to roll back, right? So
exactly.
We must be doing something right to be scaring people enough that they're going to try damn hard to try to take away those rights.
Absolutely. If we weren't evolving, there would be so much pushback. And I think in every one of the communities that I'm a part of, the spiritual community, the queer community, the entertainment community, I see that evolvement and then the pushback against it as people try to break out of fear. You know, people say to me, as an interfaith minister, I'm a pastor at Founders MCC, so a lot of folks in our congregation are folks in the LGBTQ plus community that ought to be able to be Christians. And so that's wonderful, and it's wonderful they have a place that they're free to do that. But they also sometimes don't feel like it's okay to grow their spiritual palate past that. And sometimes they'll ask me, like, is it okay that I like crystals, or is it okay that I believe in reincarnation? You know, we're sort of taught that every human being has to be the same. And an interesting thing you were talking about, when you were talking about drawing androgynous clothing, it's interesting how when you talk to a spiritual person, probably 9 out of 10 spiritual people will tell you that angels don't have gender, the universe doesn't have a gender, you know, fairies don't have a gender, and even aliens don't have a gender. But yet on the earth, we're completely obsessed with this binary system, right?
Right.
It's
right.
so strange. If we are really trying to become like more involved, like not so earthbound and more spiritual, wouldn't part of that be accepting the non-binary inside of all of us, and that there are those that just choose to not fit, contradiction sometimes that human beings have within themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just goes back, I think, to the patriarchy and
sure.
what we've just been conditioned through generations and generations of people, right? The people in power, the people who have control over what is in our media and what we're taught. You know, we're just, if we were all just left to our own devices and not particularly given this, you know, down our throats kind of concept of how society and people should identify and be, I would be very interested to see how actually we would all evolve. How many of us would actually be non-binary and beyond gender and transcending beyond gender because we're just allowed to feel whatever we feel.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And feeling like we can do whatever we want and it's not attached to some kind of binary label or even a non-binary label. You know, I'm an intersex person. I did not find out until I was in my early 30s. Nobody told my mother when I had the surgery when I was 17, but I had been diagnosed that I had to have the surgery since I was 11, or nobody had ever told my mother anything, so she didn't know. And she was super enlightened. So she was mad nobody told her and that she didn't know for 33 years. That was what made her mad.
Right.
So I started identifying more and more. Probably by the time I was 40, I consulted on a film that as an intersex person had a main character that was intersex, and the director didn't know anything about intersex folks. And one of my dear friends was the other lead in the film, and she turned me on to him. And then when the press came out for the film, they threw it to me because I was the one that had all the answers, or as many answers as I have. Because I think being intersex is kind of a ever evolving, beguiling thing. So I don't even know I have the own all the answers about myself.
Right.
Anyway, so it's amazing to me that people say to me, but you seem so this, or you seem so that. Like, they already have an idea of what an intersex person should be, and I'm already not fitting in the box. So it's interesting how we decide, right, what we think somebody else is, and whether or not they're allowed to identify this way. And I think we need to really get out of that old pattern, because that's not good.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's interesting that there are, you know, the right-wing conservatives who like to kind of counter with, like, oh, that's not natural, that's not biological. And yet, if you look at nature, there's plenty of species who also are, you know, intersexed or beyond binary of gender.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, I feel like government and society, all I feel like we should be doing for each other is, yes, there should be a guideline on how to be a good human, how to be kind and how to take care of each other. But as far as, like, how we identify who we get to love, like, I don't feel like, you know, those are things that anyone should be forcing down our throats, you know. Of course, I mean, I get, like, there's some things that are wrong fundamentally, like, ethically. And sure, those should be guidelines, right? But, like, other than that, like, I just don't understand, like, why there's this concept of, like, you know, especially the, like, the religious right on like what, you know, Western religion is so, just so archaic in the way that it's not even actually archaic. It's because back in the day, non-binary people were actually revered, you know?
Yeah.
And, honored. So it's not even like an old archaic tradition. You know, there's been the singular they used since back, you know, Shakespearean times. And yet today people are like, that's grammatically wrong when it isn't. So there's just a lot of things. I think there's a lot of ignorance maybe that's what's causing a lot of this, is that we have not, you know, culturally have not taught our future generations things from the past that were really enlightened and progressive, you know, and I don't know if that goes back again to like the white patriarchal society. There's a reason why some things are not taught, you know.
Right.
So, but yeah, you know, I feel like if we could just live in a world where we could learn as much as possible, you know, and be open-minded, learn from our history, not to make the same mistakes again, not to, you know, put down any particular type of people, to honor all people and celebrate all humans. I mean, that just seems like, why is it so hard? You know, it seems kind of an easy concept to me. You know, and that's how I live my life. That's how I live every day of my life, making sure that I honor those beliefs, you know, and that I put that into the work that I do and everything I do.
Yeah. It's so important, right? That mm-hmm. those of us that are willing to be voices continue to be voices. Because some people are just flat out scared to be. And some people just believe they have nothing to say, even though I believe everybody has something to say. It's so important that people who are willing to be out, and that's how I came out as intersex. I always believed it was nobody's business. Like, I always told my partners, because I think if you're going to be intimate with somebody, they need to know things about you. Nobody else ever knew. My mom knew. And I just didn't think it was anybody's business. That was back when I actually believed things about my life were nobody's business, Nick. But then I tracked down the intersex advocate whom I'd had on a show when I was in my 30s, which is how I discovered I was intersex. And that's how I started asking questions. And he was on the air with me now, like, you know, 10 years later. And he said, you know, there's just really nobody. There are very few people. And this was, you know, 15 years ago. There are very few, almost 10 years ago. There are very few people that, you know, are in media or have any kind of presence that will admit to being intersex. And I, like, just right there on the show, I blurted it out because I thought, wow, you know, now I realize I need to tell people and here's why. And I think we all come to that time in our life where we sort of are at a crossroads and we realize that it's time for us to start taking a stand for the world.
Right.
And that was my moment with that. I mean, there's been a lot of moments with a lot of other things I am. But that was my moment with that, and I realized that I didn't want all those people to go their whole lives and not tell anybody. And it's funny because people always say to me, "Well, you could pass." I'm like, "What does that even mean? You could pass? I mean, you know what I mean? Right. I don't even know. Pass as what?
Right?
What would I? Why would I? It's so strange to me because to me, gender looks like, you know, because you're a graphics person, Nick. You know that thing when you're, and I'm a graphics noob, so excuse me for explaining it this way, but you know when you go somewhere to design something and there's like that color wheel where all the colors are blurred into each other and you can choose from like thousands of colors depending on where you put the little dot? To me, that's what the gender spectrum looks like. Like it's just, people are everywhere on there. So I don't understand what passing, like, oh, you know, that purple could pass as blue. Like, what does that even mean?
Right. Yeah, and there's, you know, the difference between gender identity versus gender expression, which could change like on a daily basis or per hour, you know. And I mean, I think it's beautiful, and I really commend you for taking such a bold step to like just publicly announce, you know, yourself that way. It is something that is beautiful and powerful. And at the same time, it's also like there's a lot of people who aren't afraid to say something because they're scared or they're shy, but because it's not safe for them. And so that's why I think for those of us who have the voice, who are feeling empowered to use our voice, and whether it's safe or not, or if we're lucky that it happens to be safer, you know, we have to take those opportunities because every time we show our visibility and we are representing, we're making it just a little bit easier for those people out there who aren't safe to do it, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, who believe that there's something in their life. I mean, when I look back at my life, and I'm not a person, Nick, who believes in regrets at all, but when I look back on my life, I think about decisions I made in my life because I was trying to be normal, and not just from a gender perspective, or a sexuality perspective, but, you know,
as an artist, as somebody who always felt so much more like a spiritual being with my psychic gifts, so many times I made these choices in my life to seem normal so I could offset all the things about me that weren't quote unquote normal that I now think of as totally normal. And those were the things where I kind of sold myself short because I sort of tried to put myself in a box that I didn't belong in. And if I can help other people to not make that decision, then for me, that's what it's all about. Teach more people to just organically be who they are and not feel like they can't. Because we're a judgy species, right? We love to judge other people. Like, we judge everything. There are whole shows where people judge how looks and how they're dressed. And it's, you know, it's just naturally what we do. And I've always just kind of thought it was mildly annoying. But for some people who really, really want to fit in a certain way, it's devastating for them. And I've learned a lot being a pastor at Founders because it never occurred to me somebody wanted to be Christian so badly that it was devastating that they weren't allowed to be. Because for me, I've always thought, well, if that religion says no, go find one that says yes. But I also wasn't raised hardcore church, right? So we have to be very mindful of everyone else's experience, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if it's not art. So did you know when you got into fashion, when you got into art, that your own queer experience, Nick, was going to become such a big part of everything that you do as an artist and as an artistic presence?
Absolutely not. I knew from a very, very young age. I think I was probably like 4 or 5, and I already knew I was in the wrong body. And I remember thinking, like, why are my cousin, why are, like, my boy cousins different body than my body? You know, why do I always want to play with, you know, their toys or his toys? And I don't like any of these toys that, like, people are forcing on me, you know. I remember, like, every time my mom had a suitor or, like, a love interest, they all like to bring me dolls for some reason. And I remember just feeling like, you know, like, not another doll, you know, like, because I was not a huge doll fan, you know, like, I'm masculine presenting and I am trans, and I knew I wanted to be a boy, and I wanted to play with all of the boy stuff, like Transformers and, you know, cars and, you know, all the things that are traditionally, quote unquote, boys, those were the things I loved. And I still love those things, you know. I think that they're gender and they're only for boys now? No, not anymore, because now I see that they're just objects and everyone should have access to it, no matter what their identity is. You should allow the user, the customer, or the person using it to decide what suits them, right? And, as an artist, though, you know, honestly, like, as I was saying earlier, you know, just to circle back, I started using art as a way to, I think, regulate, you know, as a way to heal my soul, because I didn't feel like I belonged on this planet. I didn't feel like anybody wanted me. I didn't feel like I was meant to be here, right? Because I didn't understand why I felt so different on the inside. You know, I did not understand why I was being forced to wear things that I would have to cry and scream about. And in the end, I still was forced to wear them. You know, nobody heard me because I didn't even know how to express myself as to why I knew I did not want to wear this. I was a child, you know. So as I got older, I think, you know, we acclimate and we kind of just do the things we're expected to because, you know, I didn't want to have to fight anymore. I didn't want to have to fight for every little thing because I knew I was different and the world expected me to be another way. And there were many times that I didn't want to live. You know, there were many times that I felt like it would be easier for me to just not even live and exist anymore instead of having to fight constantly just to breathe, you know, just to have another day. And my art was kind of that way where I could put down on whatever medium I was using things that brought me joy. you know. And for a while, I remember even in high school, I would always draw these very organic, curvy, androgynous figures intertwining. And looking back, I'm like, wow, that was like me talking about like love is love, you know, and talking about gender non-binary, but without having the words for it, right?
Yeah.
And I never thought that it would end up being a part of my life's mission, you know, but when I was in college, when I finally, you know, decided that I'm going to make a decision at this moment to actually live and no more like trying to harm myself, no more thinking that I don't belong, I get to make my own future. And right now I choose to live. I think it was at that pivotal moment that I decided that I better make it fucking count. You know, if I'm going to live,
yeah,
I don't want to just exist. I'm going to fucking thrive, and I'm going to do everything within my power to leave this world better than I found it, you know, so that no other person like me will feel this way again, you know? And yeah, so, I mean, I don't know how it evolved into what I do now, which is completely about building a stronger community, building acceptance and love and celebration. But it took many years from one job to the next, from one person, one networking, one connection to the next that helped me build my voice. You know, I mean, I used to get like, it might be CMI, but when I was in college, I would get diarrhea just being in debate class or speech class, you know, because I did not feel like I had a voice, and I did not feel I could, you know, be in front of an audience or to speak my mind. And I would be in meetings at work. I would have anxiety attacks because I could feel people, you know, having kind of like this transphobic or homophobic energy with me. And I never felt like I could speak my voice, you know. And as a project manager, that can be very challenging, you know, because you're in charge of so many things. But just slowly, you know, I knew that I had to be in the discomfort and learn how to be stronger so that I grow and I evolve so that I can get to my goal,
right,
which is that I want to make a difference, right? And I
right.
wasn't going to make a difference
right.
by not knowing how to use my voice. So even starting my own brand, you know, when I was in Europe trying to, you know, get, you know, expert shoemakers to listen to me and help me make, you know, the first gender equal shoe, I faced so much transphobia, so much sexism, misogyny. I mean, you name it, I faced it, you know. But I just kept pushing, and somehow I heard myself one day, and I found myself speaking, like, not louder and louder, but stronger and stronger so that they would hear me and find new ways to communicate so that I could stand up for myself, you know, and have them hear me and respect me. And that's what I did is, and now here I am, you know. I never thought I'd be on a podcast or being interviewed or anything like that. And certainly that was
right.
never what I wanted, because I much prefer to be behind the scenes. You know, I've always been kind of a producer, behind the scenes director. Like I love those things that are creative. I really didn't want to be in the spotlight. And I look back and I think, you know, why did I name my brand after myself? You know, I should have never done
right.
that, because that, you know, that I didn't realize it was going to force me to really be in the spotlight. But I just followed suit with all the other fashion designers. You know, I was a big fan of Calvin Klein and, you know, Mizrahi. I mean, any designer, right? They're known by their name. That's their line. And so that's what I did. But I'm grateful that I made that mistake, because it wasn't a mistake. Because I actually got so much out of it, you know, for myself. Like, in me, I learned so much from being uncomfortable and having, you know, to be in the spotlight.
Yeah, isn't that great? But you always had it in you, right? You just,
yeah.
I mean, I think sometimes the voices that need to be heard are held back, because we're not the people that are naturally the pushiest kinds of people. You know, I always say that with my entertainment career, email saved me. Because once I could write a letter and send it to somebody, that was so much more in my comfort zone than cold calling someone and trying to sell myself. Like, that terrified me. So once I could just send a letter, it was so much easier for me. But some people were really good at the tracking down agents and bars and selling themselves as a client. And I'm just too shy. I was never that person. So, it's interesting sometimes how it takes a while for people to find their external voice when their internal voice is so clear. And oftentimes artists, I think, are like that. We're better working with the art than we are trying to sell it to the masses. And you have to kind of train yourself. I always say that it's like I had to form an exoskeleton to learn to deal with people on the outside, to present as an extrovert when I'm totally an introvert.
And, yeah, you know, it's so funny you say that because so many people that have met me think I'm like a total extrovert.
Me too.
You know, they see me out networking, connecting people. And in actuality, I'm like a complete introvert. When I go out, it is because I love and I believe in what I'm doing, but it takes a toll out of me. And I need to go home for 2 days to be by myself, you know, to regenerate that energy that's been sucked away. But it is why I think that, you know, there's never an excuse for people to say like, oh, I can't do this. Or I'm not good at that, you know, because to me, nobody was good at anything until they tried and they practiced until they got better, you know, and nobody was born to just know how to do things until they tried, you know, even the greatest artists, whatever prodigies, like if they didn't pick up that tool or that chalk or pencil or paint, they wouldn't have known, you know. And so that's why I think that everything, I believe in just trying everything to make sure if you never know.
Yes, so true. And just as a side note really quick, because I want to make sure we talk about Fashion Week and Queer Prom and everything, but wasn't there a part of you, Nick, that kind of loved COVID because you didn't have to go anywhere? I mean, horrible that we all got sick and horrible that people died, and I don't think my body will ever be the same since I had COVID, but wasn't the quarantine kind of magic in the sense that you just got to be in your home and not have to be out all the time around people? I've had to learn to kind of my skeleton build it up again to be around people.
I actually completely agree with you, and it was definitely a very conflicting feeling for me because I live alone at the time, and I in March, before we even knew it was COVID, I got sick. I was out constantly, you know, socializing, networking, doing community work. And I was one of the first people to get super, super sick. And I have an immune, I'm a compromised immune system because I have a kidney disease. So when I get sick, I get sick, you know. And I was like, wow, this flu is like the worst flu ever, you know. And it got progressively worse and worse. And all of a sudden people were like, oh, you can't go out. We don't know what this is. I talked to my doctor. They had no tests. There was just nothing anybody can do. And I was home by myself, unable to breathe. You know, if not for social media, I would have felt so isolated. And, you know, I had a friend in Florida who's a nurse, Dina Proto, and she, thank goodness, would check up on me every 4 hours to make sure I was still alive. And she helped, like, check, you know, my oximeter, my pulse, my oxygen, all of these things. And, you know, at one point my oxygen was down to 82. And she's like, you really need to go to the ER. And I was trying really hard not to go to the hospital because, one, you know, who likes going to the hospital? And two, I just didn't want to be, like, even more isolated, you know? Like, great, now, like, who knows what will happen at the hospital, right? And you know, but I gave in, and she, you know, really urged me to, because it was progressively getting worse. And I called the ER, and the you know, paramedics came, but they wouldn't even come into my house. They forced me to walk out of the door by myself because they were afraid to come into my home. And it was really humbling because it taught me how much people, like literally their jobs are to go into people's homes and save them, but they were too
right.
afraid to. And it was a great analogy for how people are when they don't understand something and they don't
yeah.
know something, that often fear will consume them and prevent them from doing the one thing that they were meant to do, you know?
Yes.
And,
yes. And
yeah, they wouldn't take me to the hospital because it was full and they were afraid. And then they said, if it gets worse, call us. And I said, if it gets worse, I'm not going to be able to call you. Because
right.
it took everything out of me just to even call them this time, you know. But there was something about being so pissed off, because I was just like, fuck it. Like, this is exactly why I didn't want to call them in the first place. I wanted to just go to sleep. You know, I don't even care anymore. I just want to sleep. I want to rest. And I think I got so angry that, you know, after 14 days of not going to the bathroom, not eating, not doing anything except drink water, that experience kickstarted my body and, like, all my organs. And all of a sudden, like, I just texted my friend after the paramedics left, and I said, I just want to go to sleep, and I'm not going to text you every 4 hours. I'm going to text you when I wake up, you know? And that's it. And
yeah.
And I did. And I was the most glorious 8 hours of my life because I actually slept. And I didn't care if I didn't wake up. I just wanted to rest. And
yeah.
I think 8 hours later, I finally got up and I had to go to the bathroom. And I was like, this is great. This is a good sign, because for 14 days, my body shut down to try to heal itself.
Wow.
And then I started to slowly get hungry day by day. And it took, I think I was home for at least another 2 months by myself before I was able to feel good enough to go out, you know, get tested, you know. And then as soon as I was safe, I was like donating, you know, gathering PCPs to go donate to hospitals, making drives out to people that were short on toilet paper. Because by then, I was better and I had an immunity, and everybody else was starting to get really sick and freaking out about like getting toilet paper, you know? And so I drove
right.
around all around Los Angeles. I mean, I literally drove everywhere trying to buy toilet paper to bring to people that couldn't access it, you know? It's really an incredible
awesome.
Like experience. Yeah. The roads were empty, you know, I mean, it was really incredible. And, you know, I was able to, you know, bring tons of like masks and, you know, footies, to, my friend's hospital where she worked. But yes, back to what you were saying, it was, scariest like 3 months of my life, but also like the best 3 months, because I had not slept that much in a lifetime, you know?
Yeah.
And it was
yes.
really great. Yeah. But it made me miss people for the
first
time.
It taught me a lot of things. It taught me that my health comes first, because I
mm-hmm.
used to be the kind of person that, you know, I would do a 3-hour red carpet just to take a picture with every single person until I felt like I was going to pass out. And I don't do that anymore. I don't push my, now that I survived COVID twice. And I had long COVID the first time for 18 months afterwards. I don't push myself over the limit like that anymore. I take care of me
mm-hmm.
first. And the other thing is that, you know, I say yes to everything I can, but sometimes I say, nope, that's not good for me. And the other thing is
right.
sleep. I sleep. I tell myself, look,
yeah.
I work for myself. I can technically book clients anytime I want. I don't have any clients today or a radio show or a video show or anything till 3-4 o'clock. If I want to take a nap and put myself down for a couple hours, sleep is one of the best ways that you can take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I don't say no to it anymore. As a matter of fact, I have a friend who's one of her daughter's friend's parents is a kind of a big founder of stem cell research. and they were talking about camp because she had cancer in 2016. And he told her that of all the studies they've done of cancer, the four best ways to keep yourself cancer-free are hydrate, sleep, de-stress, and laugh. So I always think about that since COVID, and I always think about how those things got me through COVID and long-haul COVID. So now I try to always do those things whenever I can. So I got a couple hours, I sleep, because especially the work that I do, you know, with people as a healer can be very energetically draining. So I allow myself to recharge. I think we don't need to feel guilty for taking care of ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think that's so important. But you probably haven't slept in 2 weeks because you've got all this stuff coming up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell my listeners a little bit about what's coming up this week, starting with Gay Prom.
Yeah, so Queer Prom was something that we created last year to help fundraise for Equality Fashion Week. Equality Fashion Week is the first LGBTQ-focused fashion week in LA that I created back in 2018. And, you know, we went from like 250 people attending and like six designers the first year to doubling everything, if not tripling, the second year in 2019. We moved from, you know, the Montrose Boutique Hotel in West Hollywood to the Globe Theater in downtown and just, you know, had a much higher production value and experience, and the show is fantastic. And this is all to really, you know, the goal was to raise money to help, like, worthy nonprofits that are trans-focused, like Trans Latina Coalition, who's our fiscal sponsor. But the larger goal, the mission really is to create visibility and build a literal platform for our, you know, QT BIPOC community, you know, those who are most underrepresented and least visible. Yeah, you know, those are the people that I want to highlight and give a platform to. And we also want to fairly compensate them equitably, because that's really the only way to grow and build our community. You know, we need to stop asking people to work for free, particularly people who can't afford to, should be able to make a wage, you know, from their services. And, you know, the pandemic really took a toll on the momentum that we were building. And so we've been on hiatus ever since. And last year, as things were opening up, I realized that I still didn't feel quite safe. You know, because the last Equality Fashion Week, we had like over 750 people in attendance. So last year, I still did not feel safe trying to do such a big event. But I figured I can do a smaller event to help raise money for it, because it costs a lot of money to compensate over, you know, 150 queer people, you know. And so Queer Prom was kind of born out of that concept of like, what can we do to celebrate and honor our community and build unity, you know, and community with each other in all of its, like, diverse, inclusive beauty that we have. But, like, also honor, like, that we've been struggling, but that it's okay to also find joy, you know, because we have had so much strife the last few years. We continue to have so much more strife coming our way. But what makes our community so incredible, in my opinion, is our resilience, you know, and our persistence, and that we're able to always come together and celebrate our community. And that's what we need to keep doing, because there are so many people out there who are trying to take our joy away. They're not only just taking our rights away, but they're trying to erase parts of our community, like myself. And we cannot let them take our joy away, right? And we have to find ways to come together and work together, because when we work together, we're going to be stronger and we're going to be a lot more effective, and they will not be able to beat us down when we're together. And that includes our allies, you know. So the Queer Prom this year is about building that community and that unity together, and, you know, taking us back to the times of like Studio 54, when life was also really rough back then. You know, they went through Vietnam War, they went through the AIDS epidemic, and yet people were able to gather in one place and dance their butts off, you know, no matter if they were like Bianca Jagger or Michael Jackson or whomever, celebrity, and, you know, the blue-collar person down the block, everybody got together. And it didn't matter who they loved or how they looked, how they dressed, you know, or who they loved and how they identified, right? None of those things mattered. It just mattered that they were there for the music. And so tomorrow night at Sunset at Audition, through the partnership with the West Hollywood Edition and the City of West Hollywood as part of the WeHo Pride programming, we're going to be gathered together at Sunset, which was actually created by the co-founder of the original Studio 54, Ian Schrager. So it's going to be just an incredible event because we're going to be in a space that's super uber elevated, you know, and in a space that many of us sometimes don't have access to. And that's another way that I am always aiming to uplift our community, is to teach us, you know, particularly those most marginalized, that like we deserve to be in these spaces. We're human and we're beautiful. We're amazing. We're just like the rest of the community. We should get to be here too, you know? And we're going to have an amazing lineup of DJs, performers. Mayor Steffi Schein's going to be there to speak. Bambi Salcedo, you know, founder of Trans Latina Coalition, will be there to speak. Yeah. Just an amazing lineup. You know, I really highly recommend people go. We're already sold out of our VIP tickets. So, I mean, I can't begin to tell you how excited I am, because I don't even feel like it's real yet, you know? And I keep asking, like, somebody to pinch me, you know, because we found out, you know, some of the other guests are coming, like Alexander Gray, and, you know, I think Dylan Mulvaney may be coming, maybe even Melissa Etheridge, I heard. I'm not sure, right? Like, but the idea that it's at least even getting heard, you know, we were on the Fox News last night, which is kind of surprising, because I'm like, Fox News, you know, you sure? But it was, we were on Fox 11, you know, and I'm just like, hey, you know, I'll take it, because even if just one person saw that little tidbit on Fox 11 last night and was like, oh, wow, you know, I didn't know about this, and it helped open up their minds just a little bit to why this is important, then we're getting somewhere, right? Then our job is not done, but we're doing the right thing. We're getting on the right course. So hopefully this helps really elevate Equality Fashion Week, which I'm going to be doing in October. And you know, we're raising money to make that event happen. So I'm really grateful for all of our incredible sponsors. You know, T-Mobile has been sponsoring us for so many years now. And I'm so grateful. And all of the community sponsorships that we've had from the local community and other nonprofits, I just feel very, very blessed that I have an incredible army, you know, of people in the community that believe in what I'm doing, and that we're all in this together.
So beautiful. And also, you know, it's a prom, which I think is important, because for, I think, to have a queer prom, for a lot of queer folks, their high school prom was not all they had hoped it would be. I think it's much different now for kids going to school now in many parts of the country. Some parts still have a little work to do, but it's, I see my friends, their kids going and their grandkids going, and I think, oh, it's so different now. You go any way you want, you dress however you want. There wasn't the stigma there was when I was, some places, yes. The places that was when I was going to proms in the 80s. So I think that's wonderful. And I think a lot of folks that didn't have the prom experience they wanted can have it now tomorrow night. And I think that's super beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I never went to prom because I did not, you know, this rite of passage in the American culture has been so just like trying to shove down our throats through entertainment and media on like what the expectations of that night is. And I was just mortified that like I would have to dress up a certain way, be expected to, you know, dance with a boy, kiss a boy, or maybe even lose my virginity type of thing. Like, and I was just like, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to go, you know? it just was too much pressure on so many levels. And I was just hoping that I can recreate that moment, but in an environment that is inclusive and loving and doesn't have any pressure except to just have fun. Just celebrate each other and have a good time. And that's it.
Yeah. I think that's so wonderful. Because I think when we're doing all of our advocacy and our activism as folks in the LGBTQ community, it's so important that we not all also forget that we have to have fun. You know, it's wonderful to get out there, be a voice, stand up, you know, be political or sociological or cultural or spiritual, however you look at your queerness. But it's also so important that we have fun, that it's not so serious all the time, that sometimes we're allowing as human beings ourselves to have a good time and to do something, you know, that's like a normal person thing, like go to a prom, go somewhere and dance, have fun, have some drinks. It doesn't always have to be so serious all the time, because we're supposed to enjoy our lives as well.
Exactly. You know, every day that we are living, we're doing the work, and it can get so exhausting. And so that's why it's really important for us to just put all the work aside for a night and just go enjoy ourselves, let loose, and tomorrow, you know, after will be another day where we get back to work again. But if we don't take care of ourselves in those ways, it's going to be too much. We're going to not be able to keep working. You know?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And what a great way to kick off Pride Month. I mean, everything about it is just delicious, Nick. And I'm so excited that you're doing it. And I'm so excited to be able to be here helping out by letting you get the word out. Are tickets still available?
Thank
and where
so
can
much.
People get tickets? Where from?
They can go to equalityfashionweek.com. There's a few tickets left, I believe, for general admission. We are going to allow people to get by tickets at the door as long as we're not at capacity. So that's why we're telling everyone for early, if you have a ticket, early arrival so that we can get, you know, well, everybody in before the programming starts, which starts at 8:30. Doors open at basically got 30 minutes to get 300 people in, which I think is totally doable. And then after that, you know, people who don't have tickets can try to get one at the door. It's going to be an amazing event. It's going to be incredible music from the 70s and 80s, and
nice.
You know, it's just dance. You know, I just want everyone dancing all night, sweaty dancing, you know, like just sweat all of the crap out.
Right, exactly, like totally complete Studio 54, sweat till you pass out and then drink a bunch and sweat some more.
Exactly.
I love that. I hope to see you there. I'm excited.
Absolutely. I'm sure you will. Thank you so much for your support, inviting me to be on your show, and just, you know, the affirming things you have said to me. It always makes a difference, you know, whenever I get to receive that. So I'm honored. Thank you very much.
I'm so glad I meant every word of it. I hope you'll come back and we'll do this again. I would love it. I would love just some time for you to come back and just talk about spiritual stuff with me. That would be so much fun.
I am super into that. So anytime.
All right, we'll do it. We'll do it once you slow down a little bit. Once the prom is over and you can relax, we'll do it.
After Pride is over.
Yes, after Pride Month. Where can people find you just in general? Find out about you and your art and your shoes and everything.
Sure. Yeah, I don't have a Linktree page yet because I really should. But you can find me, obviously, Equality Fashion Week. NickCasey.com is where you'll find my shoes and my designs. And then my Instagram is at NickCasey, which is my personal, at NickCasey Footwear for my shoes, at Equality Fashion Week for the fashion show and prom, and then at NickCasey Presents, because that's a new account I started that basically because I produce all these events, I figure this is also kind of a side gig. So I'm trying to make that happen because I do love event production and I love bringing in, you know, to life the vision that I have that is just so special because I want every event that I create to be, you know, a lasting memory, you know, for the person that's coming. I feel very blessed to be able to do that.
I love that. so much. Thank you for being here, my friend. You were wonderful, and I appreciate you,
thank you.
I can't wait to have you back, and I'll see you tomorrow night.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. The wonderful Nick Casey, everybody. If you missed those links, ashinametalspiritual.com. That's my website for all of your psychic and spiritual and paranormal needs. You can learn a lot about my entertainment life there as well. Also on social media, I'm everywhere, at Sheena Metal. Until I see you next week on Raising the Vibration Radio. Of course, the nonprofit, raisingthevibration.org, and the radio show, raisingthevibrationradio.com, and we're at Live Paranormal Network and at iHeartRadio.com. My friends, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always work to raise your vibration, and most importantly, remember that you are love and you are loved and you're loved by me, and I'll see you next week. I'm Sheena Metal, and this is Raising the Vibration.